Welcome to the Franchise Your Freedom podcast, where we share best practices for investigating, selecting, and building a successful franchise. I'm David Weaver, a franchise investor, franchise consultant, and your host. I interview successful franchisees and franchisors so you can hear from them what it takes and what it's like to successfully start, build, and sell a franchise for yourself. Let's get started. Hey, welcome to Franchise Your Freedom podcast. Today, we've got Peter Barkman, a very successful franchisee and franchisor, franchise executive today. Love to share his story and get his perspective on different aspects about the franchise industry. Welcome, Peter.
Thanks a lot, David. Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. This is going to be fun. So, Peter, why don't you share for the audience a little bit about your background? You started as a franchisee, then moved to the franchisor side. I see that you're sitting in front of your Brand One, which is a franchise development company. Tell us a little bit about your journey into franchising. Go ahead.
Sure. I started out at 20 as a franchisee. I was a franchisee for a company called College Pro Painters, was a successful franchisee. Did that for my junior and senior year of college. Had a few dozen college kids painting for me, and it's a great way to kind of cut my teeth into entrepreneurship at an early age. And then I just kind of stayed in franchising. I became an executive with College Pro. That spawned into Certa Pro Painters, and I was a franchisee for Certa Pro Painters. I left College Pro to become a franchisee with them. And I did that in part because I had an internet startup type company that I needed to spend time on, and I needed the freedom and the flexibility, and I still needed cash flow. I needed some way to generate money for this internet startup, while I was getting it off the ground. And so Certa Pro was a great opportunity for me to kind of launch that. And then I ended up, when the internet thing took off, I sold my Certa Pro franchise to my next door neighbor franchisee at Certa Pro. After the, you know, the internet business, I got back into franchising again on the franchisor side with Mako Auto Painting. I was running operations for Mako Auto Painting. I got to report to Tony Martino, the founder of the company, which was pretty cool. Came over to Certa Pro Painters and worked on the operations side there as VP of operations. And then later on, I moved over to the recruiting side for Certa Pro because we needed better franchisees. And I had a knack for kind of attracting better franchisees. And I've spent, half my time was in operations, on the operations side for franchise companies. And the second half was on recruiting the right franchisees to brands.
That's very cool. And one thing that I think a lot of candidates that I talk to don't really understand or that the experience that franchisors have in the depths of their ranks, right? You've been a franchisee, then you're on the ops side to help other franchisees perform better. And then because of that experience, you know who you need to look for in recruiting the right kinds of people that are going to then be successful. The other thing I noticed in your journey is that you really are focused on your experiences in the service-based type businesses, right? Versus, say, brick and mortar concepts like Subway or fitness concepts, tutoring, things like that, strip center kind of concepts, which most people kind of think franchising in terms of what they see in the strip center. Speak a little bit to your thoughts on service-based businesses, franchises versus brick and mortar franchises. Why are service-based better in your opinion?
Well, you know, I think for certain people, it's definitely a better option. Service-based franchises tend to cost less, and they're less of a They can be less of a commitment, because you're not signing a lease or anything like that, and you're not having to build out the space. And they ramp up usually faster, because if it's a service business, it's usually a territory-based thing. And so the territory is assigned to the franchisee, and then they can almost immediately start getting things moving, unless there's some license piece that needs to be worked out first. But with brick and mortar, typically, you know, you're looking for a location, you're signing a lease, sometimes, you know, multi-year lease, right? And then you're building out that space. All of that takes time and money, and it's a commitment of money as well over time. And that can make first time round entrepreneurs a little anxious, right? To make all that commitment. So with a service business, you know, you can dip your toe in a little bit and not feel like you're risking it all, you know? And so for that reason, service is very attractive, especially to, you know, like I said, first time folks that maybe are coming out of corporate America and they really want to make a change, but they don't want to bite off more than they can handle. Because stress is a good thing, but distress can be dysfunctional. So too much stress isn't a good thing, you know?
So. I think every entrepreneur out there listening to this can absolutely relate to that. Sometimes, and I talk about that as it relates to fear, right? Fear can hold us back, or it can be gasoline in the tank to get you out of bed and get you moving. So fear can be, or stress can be a good thing to get action happening. But if you're stuck in your head, you end up not doing very much at all. And that's not good for any business.
There you go.
So excellent perspective. And one of the things I talk to my candidates about quite a bit is that speed to break even, right? That ramp up period. Different business models ramp up faster than others, which is sort of what you were talking about with brick and mortar versus service. And so that speed to break even is what you're referring to as kind of hit the ground running in a service company. The biggest difference that I like to point out to folks is brick and mortars are generally marketing driven customer acquisition, whereas a painting company or a service company like that is more sales driven, right? And one of the things that's really been attractive in the last couple of years is the technology component and the sophistication at the franchisor level in lead generation and bringing that those customers or making that more systematic. Even in a service-based company, you don't have to be a rock star salesperson necessarily, depending on how sophisticated the brand is. Would you agree with that or no?
Yeah, I would agree wholeheartedly with that. I think that one of the things you're finding is better franchisors are getting better and better at the marketing piece and being able to kind of put that in a box for you, put it, you know, have a playbook for marketing. And you can see that that a lot of service businesses are getting better and better at the digital end of things. And so it's you don't have to be an expert at all. As a matter of fact, sometimes being an expert can hold you back because you've got these preconceived notions about your past experiences, and those may not apply to this that particular service business. So you know you're learning from their experiences, right? And so you're not having to make those mistakes for the first time. Those mistakes have already been hopefully made over time with the franchisor, and so they've learned, hey, you know, intuitively this looks like it should work, but in actuality it doesn't. And so you can prevent a lot of very expensive marketing mistakes and other types of mistakes by going with a good franchisor that's already worked through those kinks.
Absolutely. So, Peter, one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on the show a couple of weeks ago, we were at a conference. You couldn't make it because you had a big family event. And so we had a conversation on the phone because you weren't there. Talk to me about this idea of legacy that kind of came out of our phone conversation, or just share our phone conversation and kind of legacy and buying a business because people want to create a legacy for their family is a common thread that I tend to talk to folks about. Definitely something that people think about in terms of business ownership. You've got a very cool story, so please share it and kind of tie it to this idea of legacy.
Yeah. So, you know, you had asked me, hey, why aren't you at this conference? Right. Cause normally I'm at this particular conference. And I had said that my father, we had a big party for my father down in Florida. And it was his 80th birthday party. And my extended family was there. Everyone flew in. And then there were friends of his that he'd been friends with since college. You know, all of that. And it was just a wonderful experience to watch my dad so happy at 80 years old. And then, you know, you and I were talking and I had mentioned that my dad's my hero. And then, I mentioned why, you know, when it comes to entrepreneurship, my dad's the reason he put the sword in my hand to move forward with becoming an entrepreneur. And it's been an amazing experience for me and my family, you know, going through that journey over the years. And I've never looked back. But the story, it's a pretty cool story. So I'm one of four boys. I'm the oldest. And when I was 14 years old, I got off the school bus. And I'm walking up the driveway and I noticed that my dad's car is parked in the driveway and it's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, my dad's car is never in the driveway at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. Rarely, it's usually dark by the time he's pulling in, right? So I walk inside the house and my mom's in the kitchen and she's standing like in the door of the kitchen. I can still see it. She says, Dad's upstairs. Dad got fired. And I said, well, how did he get fired? He's the president of the company. My mom says, I don't know. I guess, you know, presidents get fired too. So I was, you know, wow, this is crazy. I don't, you know, what's going to happen to our family? You know, I'm 14. And I walk up the stairs to my dad's, my parents' room, and I open the door. You know, I kind of gingerly open the door and peer inside. And my dad's not taking a nap. He's got paper spread out all over the bed and he's got a corded phone in his hand because this is a long time ago. And he's waving me on like, get out of here. So I'm like, oh, well, I guess dad's okay. So I go downstairs and I see my mom and, you know, end up having dinner with my brothers and my mom and my dad misses dinner. And then at like 10 o'clock, he comes downstairs, walks into the TV room and standing there. And he says, he announces to my mom, he goes, all the manufacturers reps went with me today. And she says, what do you mean went with you? And he said, I started a company today. And I was like, whoa, you know, here I am 14 years old. Now, the cool part about this story is my dad never looked back. He built a very successful business. And my brothers and I all own our own companies or partners in companies. And we're all, you know, successful and it's created a great lifestyle for all of us. You know, it took a lot of work, but it definitely paid off. And, you know, that's why my dad's my hero.
That is awesome. What a cool story. And such a common conversation that I have with my candidates, right? Like so many people that are successful franchise owners were successful in corporate America. And then, you know, because of a down economy or a pandemic, or maybe it's just a mergers and acquisitions, like somebody that performs well in corporate America finds themselves on the sidelines for reasons that they don't even really understand. And then they are in a position to recreate themselves in a whole different way. Your dad did that way back when, I don't know when that was, in the 80s probably. So, you know, the legacy here that I heard when you shared that story with me a couple of weeks ago is your dad's legacy isn't that he was a successful business owner and that he had piles of money to pass down to his kids, but it was to represent how to go make your own path. And all four boys are successful business owners doing lots of different things, because it's not about the thing that the business is doing. It's about creating yourself as a business owner. I just love that story. What a great legacy to create this perpetual motion of independence, freedom and control, all of the things that people think about when they think about the American dream or just business ownership in general.
You know, kids pay attention to what you say, but they really do watch your actions. And so, you know, my dad took a bold, you know, move at the time and moved forward with business ownership. And, you know, he paved the way for his family, you know, and he's created a bit of a legacy, and it takes some courage to do that. But, you know, it's really about if you're considering business ownership now, it's not just what changes for you. It's think about the change that could make for your sons or daughters, your future generation, because they're going to pay attention to that, and it'll make them think differently about maybe getting into business for themselves. If you're working in corporate America and you don't want that for your kids long term, you know, then you gotta, the way to inspire them to do that is to, you know, actions speak louder than words. So,
you know, that's so funny that in just sharing that, you reminded me of one of my favorite stories. So my wife and I own a couple locations of Elements Massage. At the time, the kids were, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, 10 timeframe. And one of my daughters was like, I'm going to have a lemonade stand. I was like, that's great. Okay. So how are you going to do it? And I'm sort of asking these questions to so come up with some marketing and a good sign. And then, you know, you got to come up with your ingredients and whatever. And she got totally into this, right? And like built this whole thing, set it on the sidewalk. She's gone for a couple of hours and she comes in and plops down onto the couch. And I'm like, hey man, what's going on? Tell me how your lemonade stand went. She's like, oh, well, I had to fire Andrew, who's the next door neighbor kid that was like a couple years younger, right? And I said, you had to fire Andrew? And she's like, yep, he wouldn't listen. He kept drinking all of our inventory. And I just started cracking up. First of all, she's 8. Second of all, she has to fire the neighbor, and she's using words like inventory. And I was like, you know, they've been listening, right? They've been paying attention.
That's right.
So pretty funny. Great story on the legacy. So Peter, I noticed that in the listeners can't see this, but you're sitting in front of Brand One. Brand One is the company that you're partnering with now. Brand One is one of the country's best franchise sales organization or a franchise development company. Share with my audience what that means, what your role is, and most importantly, like the process in finding a good franchise. So kind of explain what a franchise sales organization does. But one of the things that I share with my candidates is there's a lot of franchises out there for sale, right? But that doesn't mean they're all created equal. And there's a lot of brands that try to franchise that don't really go anywhere. And there are other brands that just take off like a rocket ship. What's that all about?
Yeah. So there's like 4,000 franchises out there, right? But, and they're definitely not all created equal. That's for sure. Oftentimes what you'll find is that, you know, think about most people, their right brain or their left brain, right? If they're good at something, they're not so good at the other thing. If you think about a lot of the people, if you work in corporate America, the salespeople are definitely different than the ops people, right? I mean, they are, right? So typically some franchisors are really, really good at supporting franchisees, building systems and support and technology and those types of things, so that I would consider them to be very operationally excellent, you know, they're great at operations. And typically, if they're great at operations and they're a small emerging brand, they might not be great at sales, right? Just like people are either great at sales or great at operations, but usually not great at both. So, you know, they're very, very strong operationally, but could use help on the recruiting side, recruiting the right franchisees. And that's where Brand One comes in, is we look for brands that are very, very strong operationally, that really have their act together, but could use some help on the recruiting side. And so that they can really focus all of their efforts on supporting franchisees and building strong operational platforms, technology and things like that. They can focus on that, which they love to do and they're good at, and we can focus on bringing in the right franchisees. So when we get to know the brands, we know what to look for because we really take the time to get to know the brands, and we know what they're looking for and who they're looking for and who they're not looking for. A great franchisee is a great thing. But a not so great franchisee or not so great fit is not a great thing. So we try to help with that piece. We're very selective at Brand One. We kiss a lot of frogs when we're looking at franchise brands that we're going to work with. And so we do this, you know, heavy vetting process. And basically, there's three things that we look for. And I would urge prospective franchisees to strongly consider these things. We look at the team, the category, and the unit economics. The team, do I trust, like, and respect the team? You know, so is this a group of people that I enjoy being around, that I admire, I think I can learn from? And most importantly, are these people who are going to have my back, that are going to do the right thing every time, not some of the time, but all of the time, just because that's how it's wired. So, and, you know, as you get older, that trust, like, and respect thing becomes even more important, because if you've worked in corporate America and you've worked with people that you don't trust, like, and respect, it gets older and older as you get older and older.
I'm sitting here nodding my head as you're talking, like,
yeah.
We are too old to deal with with people that don't tell the truth, or people that have alternate agendas and say one thing and do another. It is not worth the headache, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, I absolutely love that. So please finish. You were talking about a good franchisor has three things, but then you also talked about the right franchisee. You mentioned that when you were in recruiting back in the CertaPro days. What does the right franchisee mean?
Well, it's making sure that if you're looking at the brand and you know what the elements are to that brand that are going to be success elements, then you try to find franchisees that line up really, really well with that. And so it's really about their skill, their will, and their wherewithal, right? So, you know, are they competent enough to be able to execute in this franchise system? And do they have the will? Like, is something driving them toward this? Do they have the drive that it takes to be successful, and the wherewithal? You know, the last thing you want is to get in over your head. And so you don't want to get into a franchise that's going to cost a fortune, that you're not comfortable with that investment, and now you're stressed out or distressed, you know, and it's harder to think straight when you're stressed out. So you want to match up the financial capabilities, the you know, the skill level, and also you know, somebody that brand resonates with them in some way is also important.
Yeah, I think commitment, determination, persistence is those words are kind of fluffy words, but they're really, really important when you're making a decision to start a business like this. And unfortunately for us, In the franchise space, like we're coming out of a very strong gig economy. The word side hustle is used all the time. I want a semi-absentee or part-time gig. And people think of franchises as that. I personally don't. I like to tell people that semi-absentee is a real thing. In the second, third, fourth year, depending on how strongly you can build a team to run the business, right? But we're talking about running an actual company. And that doesn't happen overnight. And I don't believe that it happens in a side hustle. I mean, obviously, certain people that have built companies over and over again in corporate America can probably do that. Not a great lead-in, in my opinion, for a sales pitch for most people to start their first business as a side hustle. I just don't necessarily like that. So I love that the will piece that you stuck in there. The last thing you mentioned was unit economics. That's kind of a franchise term. I mean, I use that a lot, but I don't think the regular folks or people that are thinking about starting a franchise know what you mean. Why are unit economics important and a criteria that you focus on in starting to work with a franchise brand that you think has some legs?
Yeah. So what I mean by unit economics, it's really about, is this business, does it have strong financials? Is it profitable at the unit level? Like, can you get started in it, and can it be a profitable business at the franchise level, at the territory level, or at the store level? And that's what we look at. And, you know, that's an important component because, you know, you could love something like, okay, you know, I play drums in a band, right? So, you know, I love the drums and I love music and I love listening to music and playing music and all that good stuff. So, but I might not, you know, that doesn't mean I'm going to open a music store, you know, because I don't know, like if the financials don't make any sense, then, you know, it's going to get old owning that music store, no matter how much I love music. And it may impact my love for music eventually in a negative way. If I get into a business and it's not profitable, and now I'm, you know, reminded of how unsuccessful I am in that business, you know, I'd much rather have a business. A lot of times people, they think, oh, well, I, you know, that's something I'm interested in and it's a hobby, but unfortunately, you know, it might not make money. And sometimes it's better to have an open mind. If you're really good at, you know, the core part of the business may require leadership or, being able to follow a program. Maybe there's a sales component to it and you happen to be really good at sales. It may not be what you thought might be the right business for you, but it might end up being the best business for you as you dive in further and you realize, wow, you know, this business is really aligned with my skill, my what I'm interested in and what I'm good at, and what I enjoy doing. And it's something that I can definitely make money at. And so you can see it more clearly. But I would say if you're looking at a franchise, have an open mind. Don't think, oh, well, that's not the right, I don't think that's the right business for me. Have a phone call or two and make that decision then, because it's a very, very big decision. And if you have an open mind, you may find that the business you thought that was the least interesting to you may end up being the most interesting at the end of the process. And I see that all the time. It's really interesting to watch.
Yeah, that's so true. I see that a lot, especially in the service-based businesses, right? Because, you know, thinking about owning a plumbing company or a painting franchise or whatever, it's like those aren't very sexy. And you think, like, why do I want to do that? Well, I can tell you this. I grew up in the foundry business. My grandfather, great-grandfather started, we made car parts. We melted metal down and we made car parts for the big three. I can also tell you that the foundry is really loud, super dirty, and smells bad. But, you know, my dad's philosophy that he passed down to me was, Do something every day that makes money so that then you can do the things that you really want to do when you're not working. And, you know, so I've taken that and share with people, build a business that you want to own, which means that it's got enough infrastructure in it that you don't have to be there every day. Right. And I would say, I live in Colorado now. I grew up in Indiana. So Indiana's flat and Colorado has got lots of mountains. My dad was a big skier. He started heli skiing in 1975, like right when they started helicopter skiing. That's pretty cool, right? And I go helicopter skiing with my buddies today. And it is in a large part because he paved that way. And he did so working in that stinky foundry every single day for, you know, for the betterment of our whole family. So legacy is a great thing, Peter. I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing that story with us. Any parting words as it relates to your experience or some advice you might want to share with the folks that are thinking about business ownership for the first time?
Yeah, the thing I would say is that if you're thinking about it, explore it. And the thing that I found, the more often than not, you know, when you talk to people that you've put into a franchise, more often than not, what they'll say to you is their only regret is that they didn't do it sooner. You know, it's never like they very rarely say, oh, that was a mistake. It's always like the greatest thing that ever happened to them, but not only them, but to the rest of their family too. If it's been floating around in your head for a long time, there's probably a good reason for it. And you should, be open to exploring it and seeing where it takes you. It could be something pretty special, not just for you, but for the people you love, you know, your family. And it could put the sword in their hand down the road, like it did for me, thanks to my dad. And so, you know, it's just not about chasing your dream, but inspiring your friends and your family to do the same.
Yeah, people are watching what you do, not necessarily listening to what you say. So, Peter, lots of wisdom in this conversation. I really appreciate your time, and thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, David. It's always a pleasure, man. I appreciate the friendship and get me on here to talk a little bit.
Fantastic. Thanks, Peter. Talk to you soon. This has been another episode of the Franchise Your Freedom podcast with David Weaver, where we focus on ideas that can lead to your impact on your community and your family by creating your freedom through franchise ownership. If you found value in what we discussed today, please hit the subscribe button or follow us on your favorite platform.